Now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Testing, testing, check, check, check.
Hello there, this is funny lady Judith Lucy.
Hi, this is Joel Creasy.
Hey, this is Fiona O'Loughlin.
Hi guys, McLaughlin here, that would be of the Craig variety.
Hi, this is Shayna Blaze.
Hello, this is Tom Ballard.
Hi, this is Melissa Capp.
G'day, this is ScoMo, Scott Morrison.
Hi, this is Reece Nicholson.
Hi, it's Gina Liano from The Real Housewives of Melbourne.
Hi, this is Reece Mastin.
Hi, this is JC Fox.
This is Kathy Griffin.
Hey, this is Todd Collins.
Hello, this is Weird Al Yankovic.
Hello everybody, it's Omar Rudberg and you're listening to The Troy Murphy Show.
Troy Murphy laughing at me in the other studio. Oh, he's dancing to my radio vet. Hello, Troy.
The last couple of shows I've listened to the Troy Murphy Show, I've nearly had a couple of accidents because my eyes have been watering with laughter so much.
Is it me? Am I the problem? Surely I can't be the only one that thinks that the world is going bananas. With doctors last summer claiming the term morbidly obese to be ditched. Look, I understand morbidly obese is not a glamorous term, but unlike the morbidly obese lifestyle, one should not have to sugarcoat everything to explain that it's problematic.
He's ready for his close-up. It's the Troy Murphy Show.
Good evening and welcome to a very special edition of the Troy Murphy Show tonight. With just over a week to go until the Voice referendum on October 14, where Australia will get to have its say on whether or not we should enshrine an Aboriginal voice to Parliament in our constitution, along with recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people being our First Nations people. This week on the show, I want to talk to our local Yes 23 campaign about their campaign, about why people should vote yes, and ask them the difficult questions that have been raised during this very, very long campaign to referendum. At the forefront of this interview, I want to remind people that we are not here to convince anyone on how they should vote, but to only give information on what people are voting on, and to discuss the topic at length and in depth. So, joining us on the phone for a chat are the people from Sutherland Shire Yes 23 campaign. The lead campaigners, Jody and Angela, along with Nimba Aboriginal man, Professor Jack Betson, who after reading up on is such a fascinating man with all that he does for advocating for improving literacy rates among Indigenous youth and would be an amazing person to have a chat with in the future. Jack is an adjunct professor at the Australian Centre for Agriculture and Law at UNE. Now, my friends, because it is a bit of a full house on the call here, let's meet each of you one by one so the listeners can connect the voices to the names. So let's start. Jody, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Troy.
Thank you so much for joining us. And Angela, how are you today?
Very well.
And, Jack, we'll get your voice, but great to meet you too.
Yeah, you too, and thanks for having me on.
Hey, my absolute pleasure. I've been wanting to get you guys on for a while to talk about the Yes campaign and what you are doing around the Sutherland Shire and how it's going. So, welcome. Thank you for making your time to be with us here on Sutherland Shire Radio as we talk to our community about the Voice to Parliament referendum. First up, you've all been busy. Like I said, I see you've been door knocking and flyer dropping and you've had your pop-up locations. I've seen you at Cronulla and at Woolaware. How are you finding the reaction from the community here in the Sutherland Shire as a whole?
It's actually been really positive. We find that most of those events that you've talked about, and we've been doing those for some months now, we tend to find that most people are very happy to chat and find out more about what the Voice is about. And overwhelmingly in the last probably month, particularly leading up to the referendum, we've really noticed an increase in support for the Yes campaign. Which has been fantastic.
That's great for the Yes campaign. And what are the reactions and questions you've been getting from people who you talk to, like Pacifics?
You go, Angela.
Oh, I was going to say a lot of people actually don't know much at all. So they're sort of quite in the dark and they're sort of asking about, just wanting to know information about, like, about the referendum. So, yeah.
That seems to be a bit of the case, and the people who contact the show here have lots of questions, and I've got some that I will ask shortly. But there doesn't seem to be much information about The Voice. Do you think that was a good strategy from the government and the Yes campaign?
I feel as though the request for a voice to parliament came from First Nations people through the Uluru Statement from the Heart. And if you look, there's information out there. I know that people do feel as though it's been a little bit challenging to find that information. We've done information sessions locally. We've got a socials page where we share all sorts of socials from all across the country.
I'd just like to clarify my previous answer. I think there's a lot of information out there. But people are open and they want to know, you know, they've got general questions about the referendum as well. But there is information out there.
Well, let's dive into some of the information that is out there and talk at it to length. On your website, there are a list of reasons why people are encouraged to vote yes. The first one is recognising 65,000 years of Indigenous culture for the first time in Australia's 122-year-old constitution. Look, I think that's a great thing, and I think you'd find the majority of people would agree with that. Is that what you're finding when you chat to people?
Absolutely.
Do you find that people mention that the question, which is really two parts in the one question that we get to vote yes or no on, is that having any conflict with people? Jack, I'll pass it to you.
I think people are struggling a little bit with it because, you know, there's this perceived perception that there isn't enough information out there. Yet, however, there's volumes of it, and I think people do have to search a little bit to find out, but I think it's one of those things. This issue is one of those things that it's worth doing that. But if you go to the websites, as you've done and others have done, those number of websites that are dealing with the Yes campaign, there's plenty of information on there that's very simple information because this is a very simple question. This is a question of recognising Aboriginal people in the Constitution through a voice to Parliament. And that voice is simply to advise government on legislation, programs and policies that might affect the lives of Aboriginal people. It's no more or less than that. That's really all it is.
What about questions that the government already has advisory bodies who can directly talk to the government and do so already?
Most of those bodies are appointed either through their organisation, the people on them, or they're appointed by government, which has been, you know, the fair for many, many years now since the abolition of ATSIC. What this model or what the proposed model is looking at is making that a grassroots movement where people elect their own in local, regional and state and possibly even a federal body. But it's just an advisory body. But the critical part for me is that Aboriginal people on the ground get to decide who represents them on that voice of Parliament. It's really the same process we use for people to operate in a three-tiered government structure that already exists. But this isn't government. This is simply a body that Aboriginal people will choose who's on to represent them when advising government on the issues that affect our lives.
Also on the Yes campaign website is better results for Indigenous health, education, employment and housing so people have a better life. That's what voting yes will do. Can you talk a little bit more into that?
Yeah, I can, because if you look at the places where Aboriginal people are actually running the service, like the Aboriginal Medical Services, for example. The Aboriginal Legal Services are another one. The Literacy for Life Foundation is another one, because Aboriginal people, when they come to the Literacy for Life Foundation, they come to request us to come. Then we work with them to try and build the resources and the team to actually run a campaign in their communities. And that's why it works. That's why we graduate people at 30 times anyone else's graduating people in adult literacy. That's the benefit of allowing people to have a voice and request particular things to build and grow their communities, which in turn builds and grows opportunities for people to go out and seek further education, seek employment and training, all sorts of things. So that's the benefit of a voice. When those things happen, everybody benefits from that.
Those statistics are amazing, and I assume you're involved in with that, Jack. So congratulations to you. 30% is a huge statistic of success. Also on your website, the Yes website, it talks about protecting the voice from politics and bureaucrats by putting it in the Constitution. Angela, could you tell us more about that?
Well, there's been a number of you know, First Nations bodies that have been dismantled over many years. Putting it in the Constitution is a way of ensuring a guaranteed voice at the table. So to actually be able to have some confidence in the, you know, that this body can continue and grow. And I think Jack would be best to answer the rest of that question.
Yeah, look, I just, what it does, Troy, that the reason people are requesting it in the Constitution is so it can't be taken away at the whim of the government. Mm. And we've seen that many times, you know. And look, it doesn't mean you put in place a body now and the structure and nature of that body remains the same forever. You can change that. But what it means by protecting it in the Constitution is that we just can't not have a body that provides advice to the federal government on things that affect our lives. That's a really simple ask from Aboriginal people. What we're asking the non-Aboriginal community to do is to allow us, through voting yes, the opportunity for us to have a permanent body to advise government. That's all we're asking.
One of the questions I've had from a listener, and I'm just going to read it out, given that in administrative law, judges can reverse decisions based on insufficient consultation, won't the constitutionally enshrined right of the voice to be consulted potentially cause delays, cost escalations, and unpredictable consequences? There we go, a question from a listener there.
If you want me to, I'm no constitutional lawyer, but the answer to that is simply no. I've spoken to a number of constitutional lawyers about this stuff when people first started to raise that an issue. This is an advisory body that doesn't compel anybody to take the advice. It doesn't legally require the government to act on the advice. It just requires that people have a listen and then make their own decision. Now, that's clear, and that's come from several constitutional lawyers over time and the Attorney General that's there now, providing advice to a whole range of people, to all Australians. Some people are choosing to provide different advice to that.
Then how could it make all these changes that's being promised, better results for Indigenous health, education, employment and housing, and so people have a better life, whilst it also, the government doesn't have to listen to the voice? We've seen at the start of the Labor Albanese government, they ignored advice about the alcohol bans that was written to the minister, the ministers at the time. They ignored that. We saw the flow-on effects like that. How do we stop that from happening if the voice can be ignored by the government if they choose to?
There's no ironclad guarantees, but there's a part of this is about goodwill and expectation that people, once there is an enshrined voice, that it'll have some body to it, some meat on the bones, where people will feel a little more, I guess, inclined to listen to that advice, you know, particularly after, you know, 60 or 70% of Australians on the 14th will vote yes to this question, then you would expect that governments would then think, well, we need to start listening to the advice. If we weren't to give advice, I would shudder to think what our communities would look like in 10 years' time.
Mm.
And if we gave advice and no one listened, you know, we've been in this now for 200 years. And the only areas that are improving are where Aboriginal people are making, you know, making the decisions for themselves. Troy, can I just share two things with you briefly?
Please do.
About when Aboriginal people they used their voice. It wasn't a voice that was given to them. But in the 1970s, in this country, Aboriginal people opened up the first shopfront medical service in Redfern in 1972.
Yep.
These days, there's a medical centre that bulk bills on many corners in every suburb and every country town in this country that everybody benefits from. Now, I grew up in a time where I couldn't get free medical attention. If we couldn't pay, you didn't get attended to. That was the case with me until I was 11 years of age. The second thing that happened was the establishment of the Aboriginal Legal Service in Redfern, again in 1972. Now, in Australia today, and based on that very model back then, we set up the Australian Legal Aid System. Every citizen in Australia benefits from that here today. Those two things alone are enormous contributions to the national character of this country. So why would we be afraid of Aboriginal people having a voice provide advice?
Of course. I guess people's concern is that it's constitutionally it's put into the Constitution. From the feedback that I'm getting. Now, Jody and Angela, I want to hear more from you. I want to hear about how the campaign here in the Shire is going and your experiences. To both of you, Jody first, then Angela, what's a personal story that you can share with the interactions you've had with people in the Sutherland Shire?
Ooh. That's a tricky one. There's been so many because one of the things that I find so uplifting about this campaign is it's brought so many people in the Shire. I mean, the Shire, we're a little bit insular, but this has actually brought people together across all different corners of the Shire and has really, really unified the people who are volunteering. And it's also been really unifying for the people that we encounter. Like I said, most often the people that we're encountering are really positive and really open, and either way it's such a unifying experience for all of the people that we come across. So, I mean, I guess that's the highlight for me. And I've made friends. I've lived in the Shire my whole life and I've made new friends that will be friends for life. Angela's actually one of them. We didn't know each other very well before this started, but I've made friends who I will have forever. So the unity that's come from this is probably one of the really great experiences I've had in being unified, coming together to make a change that's so important, so significant, but also so simple for First Nations people. Like, it's such a simple request, as Jack said.
That's fantastic. Now, Angela, what about you? Is there someone you've met along the way that, really inspired you or an experience that sticks out in your mind?
Oh, gosh. Like Jody said, a lot of experiences, but one that sticks out in my mind is we had a recent walk across the bridge, the Como Bridge, and we met up with our partner campaign across the way. And during that event, there were a couple of kids who came up to the picnic area where some people had the Uluru Statement from the Heart and a whole bunch of information. And these two little girls were there, and the one of the women that was running one of the workshops, she said she thought they were the kids of one of the people at the picnic. And the little girls went around and they signed the little canvas which we had about the Uluru Statement, and then they came over and did a little weaving project, and the lady said, "Oh, is your parents talk to you about the voice?" And they said, "No, we just read all the stuff." Like, they're about eight or 10 years old. And then they left a beautiful little message that said, why we need the voice. And they said, "Because everyone should have a turn to speak." And I thought that was really, really powerful and really simple. Like, kids have a great way of kind of simplifying things, don't they? Like, it's such a simple, simple idea, and it's a simple question that we're being asked, as Jack said. So, that's my moment, I guess.
That's beautiful. That is such a beautiful story. Now, this voice has been claimed to be very divisive, I guess, with the polls that come out. We can't believe polls, but the polls that are coming out have it at about 50-50. Let's talk the no side. When out and about, have you had any, or what sort of reactions are you getting from no voters? Jody.
What we find is I should just, before I answer that question, say one of the approaches with our campaign is we're not about forcing people to vote one way or the other. We're actually about just engaging in conversation and helping understand what the proposal is all about, and like we spoke about earlier, directing people to the information that people seem to desperately want to be able to make a decision for themselves. So that's actually our approach in the campaign. So when we come across anyone who is, supportive of no, and that's their opinion, then we honestly just say, you know, it's really great. Great, we live in a democracy. Have a great weekend. It's really, you know, like I said, it's not about forcing anyone to agree with how they vote. It's about actually people having the information they need, and people looking inside themselves. And I think it was Arnie Anderson said, the only thing that will be with you in the ballot box on the day, it's just going to be you and your conscience. So, I mean, that's the decision that each of us are making on October the 14th. I hope that's answered the question.
That does. Now, Angela, a couple of days ago, I think it was Tuesday, We saw a few news reports come out that at pre-polling booths, the Yes campaign has purple signs that are a little bit similar to the AEC's sign. You don't have any purple signs for your pre-polling. I think for the Shire, we've got Miranda and Engadine.
No, we don't.
No purple signs?
No purple signs.
No purple signs. It's a purple free zone.
Good to hear. Good. We don't want to see you getting in trouble with the AEC or making the news for having purple signs. Now, look, the Yes campaign, whilst it's been strong and on point, it hasn't always been smooth sailing. What are your thoughts on some of the unfortunate name calling that's happened that has been directed at no voters? The first one that came from the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, I'll play it for you now.
All the predictions offered by the Chicken Littles of the past.
Calling no voters Chicken Littles. What are your thoughts on that?
I think if I can just have a bit of a crack at that, I think it's unfortunate, and mistakes happen in every campaign.
Mm.
And that is unfortunate, and it's unfortunate on both sides, you know, that these things are said, but they do, and mistakes are always made in campaigns. It's a very emotional time for a lot of people, and people are under attack around the place, and you're bound to slip up here and there. I think we all just need to be mindful going forward that we have this debate with respect for each other's positions. That's the beauty of living in a democracy like ours. You can have disagreements, you have freedom of speech, and you don't risk being shot when you're coming out of the ballot box. And so we need to protect that at all costs. But you can protect that at the same time as we can be respectful of each other having the right. I've never, ever said to anyone how they should vote. I've asked them to exercise their right in a democracy. But when they ask me about the Uluru Statement, I actually have an alternative view to some. And I was thinking about this today and over the last few days. The declaration itself, the Uluru Statement, to me is a declaration of peace, love and reconciliation. That's what it actually is. And other people will do whatever with it, but that's my view. And when I talk to people about voting and people say, well, Jack, what do we do? What do you advise non-Aboriginal people to do? And I just say to them, this invitation to walk with us on this journey of this referendum, the statement comes from the heart, but the invitation is coming from the hearts of Aboriginal people all around the country. And all I ask them to do when they go into the ballot box is take your heart into theirs.
Mm.
And for me, it's as simple as that.
Yeah. I think from the people who contact the show again, a lot of them are a little bit disappointed and would love to go into the ballot box with our heart open. But when you have allegations of people calling no voters racist on both sides, people from the yes side calling, we saw voice architects and campaigners allegedly calling people racist for voting no, and the same on the other side. We saw Linda Burney, who expressed her concerns of being bullied over The Voice and racial hate directed at her. Is this just part and parcel with it, or how do you think that the general population will feel when they see this?
I think they'd feel disappointed, as I feel disappointed. I don't think this debate needed to be like this at all. I think this could have been a real prototype for respectful debates going forward.
Mm.
But let's not pretend to ourselves that every time there's an election in this country, everybody's nice to each other. They aren't. And that every time you have a federal election, every time you have a state election, there's all this stuff going on. I was really hopeful, and I'm still hopeful, that we can turn this around and just turn it into a respectful debate and do the respectful thing by just providing people with a yes case and a no case every time we get there. I'm not angry at people who are voting no. That's their right in a democracy.
Yeah.
All I'm asking them to do is to think about this and to think about us as a nation going forward and make their decision based on the information they can access.
Jack, we couldn't agree any more on how the country should go forward with respectful debate, especially when it comes to elections. One of the other things that has been this has been a very long campaign, and there's a lot of information and only a certain amount of time that we can chat. One of the biggest concerns that gets expressed to me whenever I talk about The Voice on the radio or with people that I meet are the concerns over what voice architect Thomas Mayo said. I'll play the clip for you here.
This is the first step. It's a vital step, and it puts all the explanation behind it. Like, you know, pay the rent, for example. You know, how do we do that in a way that is transparent and that it actually sees reparations and compensation to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people?
That's what he said about the Voice and from what happens after The Voice. There is a lot of concern when you hear comments like that. What does the Yes campaign say in regards to Thomas Mayo's claims?
I'm not going to talk on what Thomas thinks and how he expresses his feeling, but what I am going to comment on is that The Voice is about voice, treaty, truth.
Yep.
And whenever Aboriginal people talk about truth-telling, they talk about healing. They're not talking about truth-telling to embarrass anybody or to make anybody feel bad about it. They're actually talking about truth-telling as a healing process, not just for Aboriginal people, for the whole nation, you know, to finally step forward into that space and own who we are. And it's like when you run into a friend, Troy, and they come and tell you a problem that they're having. Most times, 9 times out of 10, they're not actually asking you to fix it. They just want to be able to tell somebody so that they can feel better that they've got it out.
Mm.
And that's a healing process for everybody. But quite often, we all want to dive in and fix it, which is not what they've asked us to do. And so the statement is around voice, treaty and truth.
Yes.
Well, that's what it's about. Now treaties are already taking place. They're already in negotiation for treaty in several states, and the sky hasn't fallen down. You know, they're just, a treaty is just an agreement.
Hmm.
That's all it is. It's an agreement document between peoples, and that's what people are asking for. So, again, these are not complicated issues, and treaties take 40 or 50 years to develop if you go down the UN line of a treaty. You know, so it's all these things are in play. They're all happening, and the sky isn't falling in. We're not all going to die because the sky caves in.
Would treaty
in 1967?
Yeah, would treaty lead to paying the rent and paying compensation?
Well, that I've never heard that before. That's the first time I've actually heard anyone say that. And people may have that view, but we're not making treaties with individuals. We're making treaties with either nations of people and a number of nations or a number of regions within the country.
Mm.
And all of those things are yet to be determined, because Aboriginal people in Victoria and Queensland and probably New South Wales soon, in South Australia, they're having the negotiation or the discussion of what a treaty might look like and how it might be made and what it would cover. So it's just a discussion at the moment, you know. Mm. So to be throwing things in there and saying, well, you know, this is what a treaty will mean, I think that's getting a bit ahead of the game. It's really
I don't know if I'm just going to try, I don't think it's throwing things in there. I think people are taking the information that's being given out, and, you know, if you haven't heard about treaty leading to rent and paying the compensation, and whether or not treaty would lead to paying the rent and compensation is, you know, a testament to the lack of information that is being put out there from the Albanese Labor government, who has proposed this voice to Parliament.
I think it's people who are critically analysing,
you know, what could potentially come is their concern with all this. And sorry, Jody, you were saying.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something there if I could, just off the back of what Jack said. Because obviously people have a lot of concerns and there is a lot of information out there.
Mm.
This referendum is about two things only. Do we want to recognise First Nations peoples as the first people of this country? And in recognising them, do we want to give them a voice to Parliament? It's actually got nothing to do with all of the concerns that are out there, I understand, but that's actually not what we're voting on next week. We're just voting on recognition and a voice to Parliament to make representations and give advice on matters that affect First Nations people. That's it. It's really simple.
But just like Jack just said, it's voice then leads to treaty then to truth.
It leads to it. They're discussions. They're all of those things are discussions. The voice is the thing we're voting on, and that's exactly what we're doing. In the statement, it mentioned treaty and truth. Now, those treaties have got nothing to do with the federal government, and they may never even come about. All that's happening at the moment is discussions about what it might look like if they go down that road, if people decide to do that. But that's a state thing. It's not a federal thing. And when I said people throwing things in, I'm not talking about you throwing things in or people out there throwing things. I just think anyone that throws anything, whether you vote yes or no, then I don't think anybody can presume that. I wouldn't for a second presume what the issues might be on behalf of Aboriginal people around the country would be when they start advising government, when the legislation around this voice is finally put together.
You are listening to The Troy Murphy Show. We're chatting with Jody, Angela and Professor Jack Betson from the Sutherland Shire Yes 23 campaign. We're going to take a quick break right now and back with more conversation right after this.
2SSR can help you promote your business with an innovative and inexpensive marketing plan. Our in-house team will help you design a campaign, voice the audio, and give it the professional production values you need. To find out more, call us on 9545 1800 or email info@2SSR.com.au to organise a talk with our experienced marketing team.
In Australia, only 13% of people keep fish. 9% of households without a pet and 17% with a pet are interested in keeping fish. The three reasons they don't keep fish are that they think it is harder, more expensive, and more time-consuming than it is. All three reasons are a myth, depending on what setup you choose. A simple tropical setup is actually the easiest and cheapest pet you can get. Pop in and visit us at Majestic Aquariums Tarrant Point, or follow us on our social media and learn how far fish keeping has come in the last few years. Majestic Aquariums are proud sponsors of 2SSR.
Did you miss your favourite show? Do you want to listen back again? 2SSR is now on demand, so you can listen back whenever you want. Simply click on the show you want to listen back to on the live program guide by going to the 2SSR.com.au homepage. There you'll find the show's on-demand player with the latest from your favourite show, music included. Take 2SSR wherever you go. It's as easy as click, play, enjoy.
Now, let's go to some of the questions. I have had hundreds of comments on my page and messages in my inbox about the voice. So I'm just going to read the questions that have come from listeners, and anyone can take the lead on answering these questions. The first question: how can the Yes case simultaneously assert that the proposed constitutional change is merely a modest advisory committee with no effect on most Australians, while also claiming it is essential for healing the nation, addressing Aboriginal disadvantage, and maintaining international respect?
I don't know who said the voice is going to be the healing component. That's not the healing component. Is if we ever get into a truth-telling phase of the statement, then the truth-telling would be the healing component, not the voice. We're trying to tack a lot of stuff onto the voice now that isn't there. The voice is very, very simple. This is simply an advisory body to government on issues, policies, legislation and programs that affect the lives of Aboriginal people. And that will be done at various community levels, so that that will feed up to the federal government through whatever body will be existing legislative moving forward. But that's what it is.
How do we get to
that's
truth?
What we're voting on the 14th.
Yeah. How do just random question. How do we get to truth? Because that sounds like what's what we need. We need to hear stories.
Yeah. Look, I would agree. Yeah, we do. I think people do need to hear stories, and that will come about as they have in many other countries. There was truth-telling in East Timor, and I was up there at that time. There was truth-telling in South Africa. And those things at the time were seen as healing components of their rebuilding of nations. And so I think that's what it would be here. It's just a healing process. But I don't know when that'll come about. That'll take time, and that's something that you have to socialise, I guess, with the Australian community, is to socialise that whole idea so that people are comfortable with it, that it's not about blaming people, it's not about doing it, it's just about telling the stories that have affected families' lives.
Mm. And hopefully the good stories as well.
Well, there will be. That's the thing. That's the whole idea about truth-telling. Whenever I talk, and people often ask me, I had some amazing experiences with non-Aboriginal people when I was growing up, when I was a kid, and even now with a whole host of people, but I also had some bad ones. So they've both got to go in there. If you don't tell the good ones, how do you find the position you want to get to? The good ones represent the position you want to get to.
Another question.
The bad ones are the ones you never want to go back to.
Of course. Now, another question that has come through, and it's something that we've heard a lot in the media of late, and that is, if billions are already spent annually on Indigenous programs under the current structure, how can adding one more Indigenous advisory body, specifically by constitutional enshrinement, bring about effectiveness not currently achieved?
I'm happy to answer this one, Jack, unless you want to jump in. I feel as though you're the expert, but I'm happy to jump in. We do get that a lot in the Shire, and understandably people want to know that the money that they pay in taxes is not being wasted and is going to where it needs. And the whole thing with actually having communities provide advice on what's going to work in their actual community means that whatever money is spent is going to be efficiently spent.
Mm.
It's going to be spent where it's needed. It's going to be targeted in the places where the local community on the ground have given advice on what's needed, what's going to work, what's going to produce better outcomes. And once the money is spent in a way like that that's so targeted, then it's going to be much more better spent than what it has been. So it's not about the amount of money that's been put into Aboriginal affairs. It's about how that money is spent effectively to get the outcomes that we need to get to close the gap.
Yeah. Now, a quick dig at both sides of politics here. Isn't that the role of the Indigenous ministers, past and present? shouldn't they have gone out there and listened to people and worked out how the money should be better spent? Anyway, that's just me having a dig at politics there. Now, another question that has come in is about the Prime Minister. If the Prime Minister thinks it's absurd for the voice to influence defence policy, how does this view reconcile with the aspirations of activists who desire joint sovereignty and might oppose defence measures that affect sacred lands?
Well, I actually, they're questions you've really got to ask them, because I don't necessarily share those views. But they're questions that need to be asked of those particular people and of the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
See, I think it's up to this. When the voice is elected by community, once that's done, it'll be those people that decide what we talk to government about. So I just think people are jumping the gun by presuming what they might want to talk about, but it should be anything and everything.
Well, that's it. I guess it's just people with concerns about what could potentially happen or be the flow-on effects from the constitutional change. You did mention these are the questions that should be asked of the Prime Minister. Some of these questions have been asked of the Prime Minister, and not only by the media, but by in Question Time. Why do you think the Prime Minister is so reluctant to answer these questions?
Because, Troy, constitutions are fundamentally they're documents of principle. Hmm. They're not documents of detail. And so the detail comes when the makeup of the voice or the structure of the voice or how all that works, that will come after the yes vote. But that'll be determined by the federal parliament, not by the Labor Party, not by the Liberal Party, but the parliament itself will make a decision on that legislation, as they do with every other piece of legislation. So that's why it's very hard for anyone at this point to say, well, this will be the detail, because there's no detail. No referendum goes out with all the detail. We didn't have the detail of a defeated, referendum, which is the independence one. But the fact of the matter is they're probably the most boring documents you could ever have in your back pocket would be a constitution of any country, because they're documents of principle.
I know, you should read some policy stuff that comes from politicians. That's pretty boring too. It's pages. Pages. You're trying to research something for a radio show and you fall asleep reading. Now, final question from the listeners. Many people who have contacted this program, they want to know answers to basic questions about the voice and what it will do and how it will work, like we just mentioned. And they've expressed concern with the lack of information from the government and the yes side when it comes to detail, in fact, in the debate, and are frustrated and have expressed their frustration with the whole, you know, to vote on the vibe of the voice and the promise that it will, with what it will do, with no exact detail on it.
But I...
Sorry, yeah, no, go.
I was just going to say, you know, what's become really clear to me during the time that we've been having conversations in the community is that the anxiety is the answer to itself, because that thing about people being worried about a lack of detail is actually, it means that that is worked out in Parliament through legislation. Mm. And as Jack said, it's not figured out by the Labor Party or the Liberal Party. It's the Parliament that we all elect as Australian citizens. So, I mean, that worry about locking things in, I think that people should feel really safe in voting yes, because it's a very clear and it's a very normal process to have a principle-based question on constitutional change and then to actually have the detail of that legislated in Parliament. That is actually how our democracy works. Like, that's very normal.
And to speak in support of what you've just said, we've had the Liberal Party say that they will jointly work with the Labor Party should this should the yes vote prevail on working on the voice together. So we would have both sides of government working together to make this work, which I think is a great thing to see, the Parliament working together on something that will affect the whole country, but in particular our Aboriginal population.
Jodie, do you want to mention the special speaker that we had last week? Julian, because
Julian Lisa, so yes, I did actually think of Julian Lisa when you were talking about not many people get excited over the Constitution, because Julian Lisa is unbelievably excited about the Constitution. Apparently he asked for one for his 10th birthday. And we had him at an information event just a week ago with Rachel Perkins and Nerelda Jacobs, which was such an amazing event because it really spoke to the safety and the practicality of what is being asked by that simple question of recognition and a voice. And I mean, the big, and we do actually have that on our socials page. So people, that whole session was recorded. So if people do want information, they can go to Yes23 Sutherland Shire on Facebook and they will find the whole recording of that session and be able to get some really solid information from someone like Julian Lisa, who is a lawyer, was the Shadow Attorney General and Shadow Minister for Indigenous Affairs. As well as Rachel Perkins, who's the co-chair of the Yes campaign. So it was really great information. One of the things that really came across for me on that night was we've got this decision, and for me it's about way more than a vibe. It's actually about where do we go to next? We've got this referendum coming up. I understand all the nerves. People generally don't like change. That's human nature, to be wary of change. The status quo at the moment means that First Nations people are dying sooner than non-Indigenous people. They have, Jack would be great on these statistics. I can never remember them because not great with numbers, but the suicide rates are higher, the incarceration rates are higher. Aboriginal people die much, like, I think it's 10 years earlier than non-Indigenous people. So voting no doesn't really, like, it kind of sticks with the status quo of what we've had. And we were talking about, is yes going to solve everything? And no, it's not going to magically solve everything. But it's an opportunity for a new way and change that, yes, is scary, but change that can make a difference to all of those things in the lives of First Nations people.
I will have to jump on your Facebook to check out that video, because I really wanted to attend that event, but I had other plans that night, unfortunately. So I will check out your Facebook page for the Julian Lisa information night. Do we know, random question, and this is just a off-the-cuff question, do we know what the Aboriginal population in the Sutherland Shire is?
Well, it's pretty much consistent with the national average. So I think the latest census showed pretty much that exact same figure, so which is great.
So we're right on average?
I think we're, you know, we're on average in terms of numbers and statistics, but we're definitely above average in the Shire.
And do you have many of our Indigenous community in the Shire joining you as part of the Yes 23 campaign?
We do.
And how are they responding to it all? Are they happy with what they're seeing from the Sutherland Shire? Are they nervous? Are they anxious? Are they disappointed? Are they happy? How are they feeling?
I probably am not going to speak to how they're feeling because that's for those individual people to say. What I can say is what the experience has been like for us as non-Indigenous people, to be walking alongside each other as we campaign and have those difficult conversations is amazing. It's such an opportunity for us, and it's just so great to be walking together. So I think there's a real strength in that.
Let's just jump back to your campaign for a second. You've got a variety of things that you're doing, the door knocking, the flyer, dropping the pop-up locations, the live events. What have you found is the most successful for you?
Could I just say one of my favorite kind of events that we've done was actually the book club. So mm-hmm. We had a Voice to Parliament book club.
Yep.
And people came along and, you know, read the book and discussed it. And it was actually amazing. It was such an incredible event. And a lot of misinformation was very quickly cleared up very early on. And a lot of those people that attended that event went on to become volunteers. We had, people sharing stories. It was amazing. So we've done some small hall events as well, like in communities, like smallish events where people get to ask questions. We do like a bit of a presentation, and we've done that alongside some amazing volunteers with incredible expertise, and then had a Q&A, and that's been super constructive. And some of the people that and the questions that have come out have been pretty challenging, some challenging questions, and just the incredible outcome of that, seeing people literally change their mind before your eyes after having a conversation and getting some good information and perhaps seeing things in a different way. That's real. Like you won't change, you know, everyone's not going to walk away saying I'm voting yes after thinking I was going to vote no, but it's really, really heartening to see how many people do.
I don't know. I didn't read about your book club. What was the book that you read?
The Voice to Parliament Handbook.
Oh, okay. So the good book to read at a Voice to Parliament book club. Yes.
it was an incredible book with some great facts and information, and really just addressed the guts of the questions that you get about this this Voice to Parliament.
Yeah, if anyone does want to read that book, it's only about 2 hours to read. So if people still at this point do want more information, then grab that book because it's got some really good information in it. 2 hours.
We gave away a bunch at Cronulla Beach yesterday, I think. Yes.
And let's do an elevator pitch. Jodie, let's head to you for this one. And let's all three of you can have a go at this one. The elevator pitch, why should people vote yes? Jodie, let's start with you.
Why should people vote yes? People should vote yes because this is a really, really simple proposal about recognising First Nations people who weren't included in the original Constitution. So it's about that recognition that's well overdue, and it's also about listening to the voices of First Nations people who can provide advice on matters that affect them. I'm lucky enough to see situations where that advice dramatically improves the outcomes for local communities, and it's really, really will make a difference.
Angela, your elevator pitch.
Yeah. You know, as the campaign's gone on, I find this more and more difficult only because it's just so obvious to me. I think it's the right thing to do. I think that it's something that's overdue. It's an amazing opportunity for everyone to walk together as Australians and really just have a brand new go at this, you know, and I think it's also got that practical, real aspect. I mean, the Uluru Statement from the Heart, the recognition that people called for, that First Nations people called for, it's not just symbolism, it's practical as well. It is safe. The consensus legal view is that it's safe. It's also, you know, a human rights issue. I think there's just so many reasons to vote yes. So please, let's do something different.
Professor Jack, your elevator pitch?
Yeah, look, I'd just say, Troy, we've spent 235 years figuring out what doesn't work. And I just ask Australians to be brave and daring, as we're characteristically known for, and vote yes with the voice on the very strong off chance that it might be another mechanism that we're suggesting that gets it right.
Now, the big question for all three of you, how do you think the vote will go on October 14, Jody?
I think yes is going to get up. I really do, because during the time that we've been campaigning, we've seen a really increase in momentum on the ground, in the streets, talking to people about the community who were overwhelmingly positive toward yes. So that groundswell of support has been growing in the last couple of weeks. So I just think that's going to keep growing between now and referendum day, and yes is going to get up.
Angela?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the support has been amazing, and I think those conversations where people get to ask questions and get good information, the answer is so quickly arrived at when people have that information. And I think that people want to do something different, and a lot of faith has been placed in the Australian people by First Nations people to actually walk with them and get this through. And I think the whole nation is going to deliver.
And Professor Jack, how do you think the referendum will go on October 14?
I think, and I have faith in the Australian people to see through some of the charadism, I guess, that's going on, if that's such a word. And it's an absolute yes. I've got no doubt that the Australian people will vote yes.
Jack, Angela, Jody, thank you so much to all three of you for your time this evening. And thank you for being with me today and answering all the hard questions that I've put forward. It is refreshing to be able to chat to someone about this and hear your points of view and understand the Yes campaign better, and I wish you all the best on October 14.
Thanks very much, Troy. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Troy.
Thank you.
And that's it, the Troy Murphy Show done and dusted for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Now, like I said at the very beginning, I am not here to convince anyone on how to vote in this upcoming referendum, but to give information on what people are voting on, which is why the Yes 23 Sutherland Shire group were invited onto the program this evening to chat about their campaign, their experiences, and to address some of the questions that are being asked of the Yes side of the debate. There was so much more that I would have loved to have covered in this interview, but sadly, we only have a 1 hour broadcast. And I should point out that I have sent an email to the No campaign to have a discussion with them here on the show. I am yet to hear back from them whether they will join us or not. A big decision about the country's future is about to be made on October 14. And whether yes or no prevails, like we said throughout this interview, I hope that what happens next remains respectful. And going forward, all future debates, including elections, as Jack pointed out, remain respectful too. And if there's one key takeout message from this entire referendum, I hope that is that we as a country can learn and evolve and change the way we do debates in this country. And that it goes from the us versus them mentality that we are currently seeing and goes forth focusing on the facts, critical analysis of what is being put forward, and that the politics of the debate and point scoring is no longer a thing. Again, thank you for tuning in to the Troy Murphy Show tonight. And until next time, my friends, bye for now.